of the student interaction. That mic right there.
Nice.
Since this is an interactive class.
So just be aware of anything you say, and we'll be holding this. Okay, we're good?
Yeah.
Okay, let's pray. Holy Father, we thank you for this new semester. And Lord, as we go to study, Lord, we pray that you would give grace. That Lord, you would enable us by the Holy Spirit to be able to comprehend what we're studying. Lord, to be able to retain what we're studying. And so I'm asking Jesus, in your goodness, in your loving kindness, Lord, that you would just place your hand upon each one here. But Lord, as they put effort in, Lord, and they have the discipline of study, Lord, we know, we have confidence, Jesus, that you will show yourself faithful. And that, Lord, you will lift them up. Lord, you will, so to speak, hold up their arms. Lord, that they will be able to see and understand, Lord, what they're studying. And that, Lord, there will be a blessing that comes from this effort, Lord, to be workmen and women who may not be ashamed, rightly dividing your word. Lord, we love your word, and we want it, Lord, written on our hearts. We want it, Lord, just implanted into our brains. And so we pray for this study that, Lord, it would help us to do that. And so we commit this time to you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
Okay, so before we get to the fun part, which I'm holding in my hand right here. This is the exciting part right here. Are you guys scared?
Are you nervous?
I can kind of tell. Very quiet. Let's start by introducing ourselves. I'd like to know your name and where are you in the program at Bible College? Are you just starting out? Are you kind of in the middle? Are you close to finishing? Maybe what's your home church? Favorite food? No. But anyway, I can tell you guys are nervous, but you're not laughing. Nervous laughter. Okay, so name and where you are in the program, just starting out all that. What was it? A church you go to? Okay, I'm sorry.
Is that the favorite thing with it?
That's good if you like
this. Okay, so I'm David Taylor. This is my second semester here.
And second year?
Second semester.
Mm-hmm. That was your first semester?
That was the last, okay. Yeah. And I go to Calvary Chapel Refuge.
Okay.
My name is Isaac Rosa. It's like my fifth semester. Their food is cinnamon rolls. And
to the church.
I go to Refuge Chapel.
Okay.
My name is Christian Benitez. It's my first semester, and I go to Calvary Chapel Austin.
My name is Miles Ermian. It's my fifth semester. I go to Calvary Chapel Pacific Coast.
My name is Catherine Chavez. It's my first semester here. I go to Calvary Chapel Musco.
My name is Deanna Carver. I completed Bible College and I'm taking class Friday for audit.
Okay.
And I go to Calvary Chapel Saving Grace.
Saving Grace. Okay.
I'm Rob Grammy. I go to Harvest Ranch County. Very first day.
So welcome.
I'm so next to
you. My name's Desi. I'm just auditing. This is the first class that we're doing. And I'm going to get a job for this place. And I'm
my name is John Wayne, and I've never been to Bible College, so I'm actually going to take a class now, but I'm the director of this Bible College. I'm one of the assistant pastors here, and I'm taking this class because Baron Harris is the most amazing Greek teacher.
Say that now.
And in regard regards to food goodness, I'll see the staple in and out, double doubles.
Nice.
You have your lunch or so going on.
Jeff Perino. I believe this is third or fourth semester. I can't remember. I took two semesters, like 4 or 5 years ago.
That's right.
And my home church is Calichap.
Okay.
My name is Chris Kings. This is my second semester. I attend Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, and I love food.
All right. Yes.
My name is Chuck Allison. This is my fifth semester. I go to Harvest OC. And have you guys ever been to that Ranch's Pizza over on Baker and Harbor?
It's good.
I have not checked that out.
My name is Andrew Pico. This is my first semester since I graduated. I'm taking this actually to supplement my learning of Veritas, hopefully help me get through there. I go to Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa, and my wife's fish curry is the best thing on this earth.
My name is Hannah
Sabota.
This is my first time at Lynn Bible College, and my home church is Calvary Chapel Rosarito in Mexico, but I go back and forth between here in Costa Mesa and Refuge in Huntington Beach.
Wow, sorry you're here for the semester.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm Amanda, and this is my fourth and final semester until I graduate. And this is my home church, Costa Mesa. So, and I like sushi.
My name is Taylor Ferris. This is my first semester, and I like talking.
And this is my home church.
I'm Richard, and my home church is a small church in Pomona. It's called North Town Christian Church. This is my second semester here. And honestly, I'm excited to be back. I love tacos too, man.
All right, my name is Michael Jacobs, and this is my second semester here. I go to La Habra Christian Church, and I like In-N-Out.
Mm-hmm. I'm Damian Hutchinson. This is my third semester here. My home church is Calvary Chapel, West Grove, and Hispanic food in general.
My name is Baron Harris. And I'm not sure what semester this is for me. I've been teaching at Bible College for a little while. And Costa Mesa is my home church. I'm on staff here with Pastor John. And favorite food? I just had dim sum. It was really good. So I don't know if it's my favorite. That's what's in my mind right now. I like food. A little bit about my background. I've been teaching Greek grammar for probably 4 or 5 years in the classrooms as far as Greek teaching. I went to college at Moody Bible Institute in Chicago, and one of my majors was New Testament, so I took Greek there. And then went to seminary, Gordon Conwell Theological Seminary in Boston. And I had a Greek professor. If you look at your textbook, his name is William Maddox. And so I like this book. And took Greek there. And currently doing postgraduate work at Talbot Theological Seminary in New Testament. And so I'm doing more Greek. And so it's an area that I really enjoy studying the New Testament and being able to work with the language. This year, this class came about really because instead of teaching the Greek in the School of Ministry, we've moved the language program over to the Bible College here. And so we're changing our approach to how school ministry students are going to be approaching the New Testament without learning full Greek. And one of the reasons we're doing that is because in the School of Ministry, we didn't have enough semesters to really cover the whole subject. And so this class in the spring is really a foundational class to really move to what we call third semester Greek or Greek exegesis. What we'll be doing in the fall and the spring is really focusing on how to recognize the forms of the language, what the words look like, with a little bit of the function for the words. But in the third and the fourth semester of Greek is when it really gets fun, because then all you're doing is interpretation. And you're just spending all your time in function and not having to do all of the form part, recognizing forms. So this fall and this spring is the hard work that goes into getting you to the third and the fourth semester. The third semester is where we really unpackage the grammar and we start working on a book of the Bible, like the Gospel of John. In the fourth semester, all we do is look at that. And probably that class will be focused on something like the book of Titus and just working from the Greek text. So it's a lot of fun to talk about interpretation issues and commentaries and things like that. But you, having done the work here in these first few semesters, will be able to engage with those commentaries that talk about the text, because you will have the skills and the tools to be able to participate. You will no longer have to just trust that somebody tells you the text is saying. You'll be able yourself to unpackage that and discover that yourself. So that's really, really exciting to be able to have that skill set. Now, this is an elective, and so it's not required. And I'm happy that you're all here, but I want to, and if you're a first-year student, you're a first-semester student, you're really brave. You saw Greek and you just signed up. But that also says something about maybe your initiative, you know, and that you're ready to go for it and stuff. And that's really exciting. But this is a skill that not everybody has. Most of us that sit in the pews are dependent upon what we're being told. The Greek says this. This is the kind of class that allows you now to move and be free beyond what somebody's telling you. A lot of pastors don't have that skill set. A lot of pastors have to say things in the pulpit from what they've read and trust what the source says. So that's really exciting that you are going to gain a Bible study methods, you know, skill set that puts you into the category of not just having to parrot what everybody else says. You will actually look and examine it for yourself. So, do you have any questions before I pass out the syllabus and start talking about how the class works? Okay. I am just getting over pneumonia, two, week and a half ago. And the last thing to come back is my voice. So that's why I'm talking kind of faint right now. I'm hoping we have Labor Day out next week too. So in 2 weeks from now, I'll have a much more powerful voice in class. So I have to forgive that. Okay, so let's start by looking at the syllabus, and we'll kind of talk about the philosophy of the class and how it's going to work mechanically. Is it warm in here, or is it just me? Did you? Okay. This is 3 hours, so what we'll normally do is we'll take breaks at like 50-minute intervals, or some days if we're really cranking and everyone's excited about what we're doing, we'll take like a longer break in the middle, and we'll split it in half. We'll kind of get a feel for it. I brought up the idea too. I don't know if you guys are open to this because it is a 3-hour class. That's right after lunch. If any of you would like to volunteer, I can teach you how to make coffee at our high-powered coffee machine that's down in the kitchen downstairs. We have some thermoses and things. And I wouldn't mind having that up here available to everybody. I'm not sure about cream and sugar. I don't know if you want to donate that. Also, if you want to bring some snacks in, maybe we'll just get a table or something like that, and someone wants to make something or something like that, you can bring that in. In class, I'm not sure what the Logos policy is about food and drink in here. I don't mind food. That's probably okay too, just as long as it's like not chips. you know, like, if the bag is going and everything like that, you know, that can be distracting. So, but, you know, it's Monday afternoon, so, you know, whatever helps you, you know, kind of keep going, that's fine. So let me know. I've got the machine downstairs down to the science, so I can pass on that knowledge to you if you're interested in being maybe our coffee guru for the semester. On the syllabus, you guys can pick that up. You can see this is Greek Grammar 1. This would be, if you were to go to Biola or to go to seminary, this would be a catalog description if you took this class at Veritas or someplace like that. Our textbooks are going to be the same. So this is a college class, and it's a three-hour class. So if you were later on to go to another school, your competency would match what they were looking for in a catalog description for that. And that's kind of neat. My contact information is there if you need anything. That's the phone number here at the church, and that's my email. The purpose of the course. This course will introduce the student to the essential grammar, morphology, and vocabulary of Koine Greek, the language of the New Testament. When I talk about grammar is nouns and verbs, prepositions, things like that. One of the textbooks that you might have with you already if you've picked up your books is English Grammar to Ace New Testament Greek. So, when it comes to grammar, a lot of us struggle just with our own English grammar. This is a cool little book which will help us kind of remind us about our own English grammar to the point of bridging us over to Greek grammar. So, we'll be learning about parts of speech and things like that. Who knows what the word morphology means? Yes.
Simply where things kind of came from. Where it came about, how it started initially.
Okay, like roots of words and stuff like that? Yeah.
So the forms? Like
the forms? Yeah. Forms and then how they change. How the forms change, how they morph. So when I want to say something like, I threw the ball, what's the subject? I. Right? So we just did some grammar. Very good. Now, what if I wanted to say it in the plural form of the subject, what would it be? We threw the ball. So we just did some morphology. Move from I to we. From singular to plural. Okay. The purpose is to gain a working knowledge of this important subject and therefore better interpret and understand the text of the New Testament. So everything that is going to contextualize our study in this class is to be able to study the Bible and to do it better. That's the purpose. The structure. This class will meet for 3 hours on Mondays during the fall, August 25th to December 8th. Students will follow the reading, workbook, and quiz schedule given below to supplement our class time, our lecture time. Exams will be scheduled according to finished work in the grammar text and workbooks. So we will only be tested for as much material as we get covered. You know, if we slow down for something, you know, or Labor Day got in the way or whatever, you know, that would affect how we, you know, do our testing and things. Okay, this is where it gets really good. Class time will be divided between lecture, the review of students' homework, quizzes, and exams. Preparation prior to each class should include studying for the quiz or the exam. That's the previous material we've gone over. Learning grammar, vocabulary, and completing the written exercises. That's your workbook. That's the current material. And reading the assigned section from the textbook that will be covered in the next lecture, new material. So we're always constantly going to be in this ecosystem of what we've previously done, where we are right now, and then pushing a little bit forward. And so will always be looking at kind of those three categories constantly. New concepts will be introduced each week, so daily diligence with assignments will be key to the student's retention of the subject. If you want to retain what we learn, then you have to participate fully. And this is a little bit of a lecture for auditing students. Can you raise your hands again? Let's see if you agree. Okay. So auditing is great, but in this class, to sit back and to audit in a sense, I'm just going to come to class and enjoy what I see in class. It won't take very long before you're not able to engage in what we're talking about, unless you do the work. So whether or not you're going to continue to audit or sign up and take it for credit, I'm encouraging you, like if there's a workbook assignment, that's really where the, I use the cliche, the rubber meets the road. The workbook is where everything that was theory up here starts happening down on the page. And that's where all the frustration takes place. And that's where you're like, what is going on here? Because then when we come back to class and we look at our workbook together, that is when we will piece together the parts that maybe you didn't see how they connected to each other. And so the exercise that we go through in the workbook is super important to being able to comprehend what we're learning. And the comprehension will not be fully realized when you're at home doing your homework. You will come to that place of enlightenment when you're back in class looking at your completed homework, and then you'll start having aha moments there in class. So I hope you can remember that when you're at home doing your homework and you're like, I don't know this, that's okay, because that exercise of getting to the point of hitting that wall is important. It's coming to class and reviewing the homework that you then push through the wall, usually. Unless you have really good natural languages. So if you're auditing, that's fine. But when we look at the schedule of homework, you're going to want to have the workbook. You're going to want to go through the exercises in the book. Okay? Here's the objectives for the class. The student will gain a working knowledge of the first half of basic grammar of the Greek New Testament. So we won't have in this fall the time to go through this whole book. We will only get about halfway through the book. Or the spring will be when we finish. To begin to recognize inflected forms and their significance. So what's inflection? Inflection means to change. So when we went from I to we inflected the subject. So that's a lot of Greek is understanding how the words change, what their inflection is. Greek is a highly inflected language. There's lots of changes, but it's very regular, the way that it changes. Do you see a common root between the words I and we? Not really. How do they relate to each other? In Greek, the forms are very consistent. So Greek is a much easier language to learn as far as recognizing how it inflects. People that come to the United States and try to learn English have a really hard time with English because the inflection is all over the place. My 4 and 5 year old daughter right now is learning this as she tries to put words into the past tense because she adds ed to everything. But some words we don't put ed into the word when we want to put it into the past. So I'm flying. But what happens if I did it yesterday? I flew. I fly. Right? So she's learning that. And we take that for granted because it's our native language for most of us. But if it's your second language, English is really weird. How it does all these different things. Greek, thankfully for us, is very consistent in how it changes. The second objective, the student will have begun building a foundational vocabulary that will give them recognition of more than 60% of the New Testament. So just from this class, just in the fall, just half of the book, you basically will have 60% of the vocabulary of the New Testament down. That's exciting. It's encouraging. Okay. How many times does the word "and" occur in the Bible? So once you learn the word "and" in Greek, quite a bit. Third objective, the student will be introduced to basic grammatical syntax and the primary rules for interpretation and translation of the text. Syntax is a grammatical term for understanding how the forms that you're learning function with each other. What to expect when you have a sentence and you have the different components of grammar. That's what the study of syntax is. That's really, you get hardcore to syntax in the third semester. Because you're not dealing with forms anymore. Now you know the forms. Now you need to learn about more about how they work. But we do get a little bit of that in Greek 1 and 2. Vocabulary. I already talked about it. Okay. Next bullet point. The student will be required to continue their will be equipped to continue their study of the Greek New Testament by orientation to advanced grammars, lexical resources, and exegetical primers. I just made that sound really fancy. But what's going on there is by taking this class, you will be able to use Bible study resources and tools that you couldn't use before. Dictionaries for looking up Greek words. You will be able to find what you're looking for in those kinds of books by having taken this class. So you won't have to go to a book that's English-based and gives you some of the Greek. You'll be able to use an actual Greek lexicon, a Greek dictionary, and you'll be able to find agape, yourself, in the Greek. So that's one of the benefits of this class, is that you're able to use those kinds of tools. An exegetical primer, that's kind of a book that's going to teach you about the hermeneutics and the interpretation issues. Now that you know Greek, you're able to not just work in English, you're able to work in the Greek. And then lastly, the student will learn an approach to studying biblical languages as a tool for ministry, and not simply an intellectual exercise. So this class should get you excited about Bible study. And whether that's personal Bible study or you're in a situation where you are teaching others and you're doing ministry with the Word of God, this is a class that will help you be better equipped but more excited. Okay? Here's the requirements for the class. Quizzes. My favorite part. Preparation and class participation will directly correlate to the level of comprehension of the material. That is a beautiful sentence. Spent a lot of time creating that sentence. Preparation and class participation. So your prep work and how you participate here will directly correlate to how well you comprehend. How what you do outside of class and how vocal you are here will elevate your comprehension. So if you come to class and you never say anything, your level of comprehension won't be as high. And I will help you participate so that you can hit the highest level of comprehension possible. Therefore, it is important that the student be familiar with the required new material for each section, have retained the vocabulary from prior lessons, and continue to build upon successive grammatical concepts. Written quizzes will be given at the beginning of most classes to ensure an ongoing connection with the material. The instructor has the liberty to drop up to 3 quiz scores contingent on the total number given. So that's some flexibility with that. Like if you have an absence, you know, if something happened or whatever, then we'll have some drop quizzes to work with. I don't do makeup quizzes. The quizzes are only the day of the class. So if you miss more than 3 classes, then I don't have any more probably room to help you with this for the time. So you want to make sure that if you do have to miss, that it's plant like as much as you can plan to miss, because you don't want to miss the quizzes. The quizzes are to really kind of review what you've been learning. So you'll get a knack for them, and we'll quiz all the time so that you'll get a feel for it. And the quizzes are worth 25% of your grade, but there will be a mass quantity of them. So that means the way the math works, that if you have a couple bad quiz scores because there's a large number of them, it doesn't really adversely affect your grade, you know, if you have a couple of scores that are low, just because we'll be doing it so much. The reason I quiz a lot is, I don't know where my dad got this from, but he told me when I was in high school that once written is three times read. So by writing, you are quickly multiplying what you're learning quicker than just reading something over and over again. So when you want to learn a chart or you want to learn a vocabulary word, writing it down is like having read it three times. And so when you're learning vocabulary, we'll talk about one of the best ways to approach that, but it's through writing. And so actually by quizzing, it's getting you to write it again and thus make sure that it's written in here a little bit better. Homework. Assignments will be given from the required workbook. It is here the student will holistically practice all the parts of each lesson. The workbook is where everything comes together. It is imperative for the assigned material to be fully completed on time so that it can be quickly determined where one may be still struggling with specific concepts. If you come to class and don't have your workbook done, you don't have your homework done, then we can't together help discover where you need to work on something. Because we don't have the point where you hit that wall. That's what we need to find out in class when we come back to review the work, is which concepts we need to go back and reinforce. So if you come to class and don't have your work done, we never get to discover that. I mean, your grade won't be as good either, but that's not really the point. The point is that we're engaging with the homework. This is where all the magic happens. Exams. There will be both a midterm and a final for the class. The material included will be drawn from the work done during the semester. Therefore, completed homework will ensure familiarity and ease with the exams. Yes, ease. So, if you do the workbook, most everything that you see in your exam, you will have already seen. You know, the exam will have vocabulary. Well, you've already gone through this, the vocabulary has been through. It'll have translations. But the translations that I pick will actually be from your homework. So it won't be anything new, it won't be anything radically new. It'll be all work that you've done already. And that's encouraging, right? Yes. Very encouraging. Okay. Any questions? No. Okay. You're still here. Okay. Required resources. Three books. Lamerson, English Grammar to Ace Contested in Greek. That's a fun book. Does everybody have this book? Yeah? It's one of my favorite chapter titles is in here. For prepositions. I mean participles. Participles. You know what a participle is? Participle is the Fijian mermaid of the Greek New World. Or why adverbial participles don't wear a watch. So this is a fun book. Participles are the Fijian mermaids of the Greek New World. Why? Does anyone know what a participle is? Okay, well, you don't have to worry about participles because that's in the second semester. Yeah. A participle
is something that's ongoing, like
an ing word. That is a participle in English. That's right. But when you think about a mermaid is half what and half what?
Half human
and half fish, right? Participle is part noun and part verb. That's why they're Fijian mermaids. They're Greek. They happen now. Okay. So that's that book. Maus, Basics of Biblical Greek Grammar. And Maus is Basics of Biblical Greek Workbook. Who does not have those yet? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay. Well, because of Labor Day next week, we have a little, we have some grace and mercy going on right now. So that's good. I went over to the chapel store today, and she had on her computer 2 of the grammars left, but she has more in order. So you want to maybe go in there, and if she's out, then make sure you give your name to Susan to hold one for you when they come in, if you don't have it yet. And the same thing with the workbook. This is the workbook right here. The workbook has perforated pages so that we can tear them out. So after we're done the work, we can turn them in to record the grades. And then it has holes so that when you get your homework back, you'll want to keep it. Because why? So, you study for the exam, right? Yeah. And then this is the grammar. It should have this is the third edition. So you might see a first or second edition floating around, but they're not 8.5 by 11 like this. They're smaller size. So if it's big like this, this is the third edition. This is the one you want because the pagination on the reading assignments are in light of the third edition. Okay. All right, now, that's what's required. In the chapel store, I think there's like a 35% discount or something like that for the Bible college. 35? Okay, now, recommended resources. There is a little book by InterVarsity Press that's kind of cool. It's called A Pocket Dictionary for the Study of New Testament Greek. And basically, all of the big words that we use in here, like inflection, stuff like that, are in this little paperback book. So, if you're into that kind of thing, and you want, what was that word you just said? Second declension? What's declension? You know, you can actually keep that book and look up words. Usually I'll explain what the word means, but if you miss it really quick or you're at home or something like that, it's kind of cool to have. I like having books like that. When I was in seminary, I was taking a class on the Book of Revelation. And the teacher that I was sitting with was an amillennialist teaching the Book of Revelation. So he had a very different interpretation of how things were going to end than I did. And the materials that we're primarily using in class were from that persuasion. But I had a little Charles Ryrie with me all the time in class. So I had the premillennial view all the time. And anytime we were doing verse by verse through the text, I could look down and quickly see what the other interpretation of this passage might be. So I like little books like that, you know, to help me out. It's a cool book. Also recommended, Maus's Basics of Biblical Greek Vocabulary Cards. One of the assignments in this class will be to have vocabulary cards. Now, you can either make them or you can buy them. If you buy them, they have them in the chapel store. They're in a box like this. This is over 500 vocabulary words. We're not going to do that many. First semester Greek, we cover about 300 vocab. We go on to third and fourth semester, you just continue to work on new vocabulary, so that's why there's 500 in here. These are really cool because they are key to the chapters. So, if I take one out here, you have the Greek word on the front. You have the card number in the corner, 785. I guess there's more than 500. and then I think what that is the chapter number right there, 15. Some of them have more information than that, though. Let's see if I can find a better one. Oh, yeah, that's not the chapter. This one is the chapter. Oh, 15 is how many times it appears in the New Testament. So that word I just held up only occurs 15 times in the whole Bible. So this one here, you can see BBG in this corner up here, and then has 11. That's the chapter that this comes from. So these are cool because they're key to the chapter that you're studying for your vocabulary. That's helpful. So if you like them pre-printed, you can buy that. If you want a badge of honor, you can make your own. These are mine from seminary. And you guys used to wear them on their belts. Or they had them on their bags. But these are your friends. And you took them with you everywhere. Because you were constantly working on your vocabulary. Whether you were waiting in lunch line or whatever you're doing, you're just working on your vocab all the time. But remember, once written is three times read. So going through the exercise of writing your own vocab cards, actually one of the ways you can help you learn the words. And so what I do is I take 8.5 by 5, or not 8.5 by 5, but 3 by 5 card, and I cut them in half. And I punched holes in them, and then cut a ring to put them on. And I did the same exact thing. I wrote the chapter number, how many times it occurs in the Bible. I just basically mimicked the Sorbach cards and with the Greek on the other side. So, if you make your own cards, there will be extra credit when we have our vocab check days. So you want to bring your vocabulary cards to class, and then we will hold you accountable if you have your vocabulary cards. If you get the store-bought card, that's fine. But there will be extra credit if you make them. Because you'll know it. So, any questions on that?
How many cards are out there?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Wow.
It's a lot of hard work. I'm going to pass this down on my shoulder and Sunday. Not yet. This is my 12-year-old right here. He's taking this class. So he's starting homeschooling this year. And so he's going to have Greek as one of his homeschooling classes.
Nice.
That's just encouraged all of you.
There's
a 12-year-old in the class.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, I have a question. You said you remembered the
store-bought
cards. How did you know how many times it occurred in the Bible? Or does it tell you in our book? Or
I think once I knew the pattern, like I would got the information either from the textbook or I borrowed somebody else's cards or something. I may have gone back later and added that after I bought them too. Always kind of interacted with them a few times. Okay, so I think on the schedule that I have the vocab check cards on there. But if I don't, then I'll announce it that it's coming. Okay, online resources. Technia.com is Bill Mounce's website, and this curriculum is actually used by homeschoolers, and so he has some really cool stuff on there. He has like an electronic flashcard program and some other cool resources that you can download from his site. BiblicalTraining.org is also a website that's hosted by Dr. Mounce, and it is seminary courses that have been recorded, just like we're recording here. He's gone in to like Asbury and Gordon Conwell and Trinity and some of these seminaries and had professors donate classes and put them up on BiblicalTraining.org for free. So it's all the lectures, the syllabus, the textbooks, and everything, but they're free classes. And the vision is so that the courses could go out into like Africa and parts of the world that they don't have access to schools. It's a really cool site. And the reason I put that on there is because he has on there some abridged lectures from Dr. Mounce himself that goes with this book. So you could actually listen to him give you some summaries of each chapter. And that's pretty cool, the MP3. He does have on Technia, you can purchase his full lectures. If that's something that you're really, really into it, you can do. Either audio or he has video. He just did a video once recently. him sitting in his kitchen, like talking, but he's very casual. It's pretty good. So you don't have to do that, but for those of you that might want to supplement, at least maybe the racial lectures. What we did with Dr. Mouse when we took him in seminary is we were required to buy his full lectures and we had to buy his lectures on cassette and listen to them before we came to class, before he lectured. Yeah, so that was fun. Okay, on page 3, I've included, just for your own enjoyment, a bibliography of resources. This may not be too exciting now, it may look scary, but later on, this may be some material that's interesting to you. So let's explain the categories. The first is grammars. Like we have our grammar here. And these are some of the other grammars that are used to teach Greek. Don't see if you go by these or anything like that. This is just so you know. This grammar right here that we're using is the number one grammar that's used right now, pretty much across the country. But this is just for your reference. Intermediate texts. These are books that would then, when you went into third and fourth semester Greek and beyond, these are books that would be helpful to you. Exegetical primers. These are books on how to do interpretation. So once you've gotten the skill set, once you've been able to kind of recognize forms pretty well, how do I interpret the text? That's what these are. And what I've done is I've put an asterisk next to the ones that are the most important. So you can see there are Gordon Fee's New Testament exegesis and handbook for students and pastors. If you took fourth semester Greek with me or exegesis 2, you can either call it fourth Greek or exegesis 2nd, that would be our main text for that class. All right? Lexicons. Lexicons, that's a fancy word for dictionaries. So these are dictionaries for looking up how Greek words are used in the New Testament. So the word may be used 3 different ways. How do I know how it's being used in my verse? That's the kind of tool that would help you to know that. A lexicon. New Testaments. These are Greek New Testaments. I think one of them on here is like an interlinear Hodges. Arthur and Hodges, the second one that's interesting, majority Greek text in the New Testament interlinear, has the New King James in the margin. So that's kind of cool. You can see the interlinear, like how the Greek words are being translated, and you have the New King James over on the right side of the page, so you can compare it to that. Okay, so that's just for you guys, your future needs. Course schedule. The course schedule. There's 3 columns here. Okay, this schedule is going to be your buddy. This is your guide for the class. And I think that this is going, some of this is going on the populate too. So you have to give an assignment due. It will match and populate what's on here. Okay, but this is the master schedule. So you have 3 columns. You have the section that we're in, or the date, in this case, more relevant than the date, and what work is due. So you can see under August 25th of today, there's nothing due. The next column is the lecture or the topic in the chapter that we're covering. So today we have an introduction in the text, in the alphabet, and pronunciation. We're trying to cover as much of that as we can today. And then to the far right is the reading. So what do those initials mean? M and L.
Mouse
and Lamerson. Right. So if you see a little M there, That's your reading that's due for that day from Mounts, from the grammar. We see an L. That's your reading that's due that day from Lamerson. So we don't have Lamerson every time. Lamerson is really cool also because, see this color here, this teal green? That's the color that this text used to be in the second edition. So this book is actually key to the chapters of Unity, which is neat. So that, like, when you're reading Lamerson, he'll tell you which chapters of Mounts he's talking about. So they work together that way. The Zondervan's world of language. So these are all Zondervan tools. So that's your reading schedule. Now, I messed up because I put a whole bunch of stuff for September 1st on the schedule. And we are not here September 1st. So we will have to make changes on the fly depending upon how much we get done today, and then for when we come back on September 8th. Seems so far away. But we'll primarily be working off of the schedule. And hopefully we'll reflect that. Okay, so on page 5, you can see the 20th. You have your midterm. That will only cover material up through that we've been through so far. So if we get a little bit behind here, I'll let you know. Like, if we don't get to the third declension, chapter 10, by the midterm, I'll say, hey, your homework that you did through extras through chapter 8 is supposed to be your part of the midterm. I'll let you guys know that. And then we have a final exam. I put December 8th. Because that's our normal schedule. The 8th is a Monday, so does the finals follow when we normally meet in class? Okay, good. Right, that's what I assume. Alright, then you have attendance policy. This is the Bible College, their policy. You want to make sure you follow it because they're the ones that will penalize you. For me, the penalty is heavy enough if you miss class. If you don't take it, if you miss a quiz, or you don't have your homework done, then you're going to feel the hurt. So that, to me, is the penalty in the class. The Bible College, though, they're taking attendance, and you need to make, if you miss a class, you have to take notes and that kind of thing. Sure, you know, you follow that policy. The late homework policy for here, do the assignment, that's true. If you does something happen, something comes up, make sure you get your homework done and you get that to me. Style guide, we're not writing any papers in here. So you're thankful for that, right? Okay. The code of academic integrity. Let's just read this. Complete integrity is expected of each Bible College student in all academic endeavors. Any work you submit for this course must be your own work. Any outside help or source material must be truthfully and accurately acknowledged in the work you submit. Documentation of sources must conform to the guidelines and style guide and doesn't apply. You're encouraged to study and discuss course material with other students. You can give and receive consulting help with each other, but copying and sharing your work is prohibited. No student should ever possess a printed or electronic copy of another student's work you have. If collaboration on assignments is allowed, in this course, your instructor will inform you and address that in a second. During examinations, each student will work alone with no help from others. The use of any printed or electronic materials is prohibited unless specifically allowed by the instructor. We're totally analog in this class as far as workbook and vocabulary and stuff like that. So I'll be electronic up here every once in a while, but you guys are pen and paper pretty much. You must do your own work during exams. The use of any, okay, the penalties for violating the code may include receiving a zero, failing, or being dismissed. Okay, here's our homework. Here are the stages. I would like you to try to do the homework on your own. Okay, so when you look at a sentence to translate it, you're trying to break it down, I'd like you to try to take your first stab at it by yourself. I don't mind if you then work with somebody and you say, hey, you know, how did you do on this one? You know, like, I got this over here, because that's part of learning in this kind of work. So I don't mind that. I don't want you copying what somebody else has done. That would be a no-no. So if you're already done with all your homework and you're good and someone's coming to help, then what you should do is you should be helping to guide that person. Oh, do you see what that is there? What does that mean? You know, and help them. You know, it's more like a tutoring kind of thing. But that's fine. Working together is okay in this class, but make a go at it first. Here is the warning. My dramatic, weak voice. If you look hard enough, I'm telling you this, because there is a tree in the garden to not eat from. Right? You know what that means? Right, you know the story of Adam and Eve, right? Mm-hmm. There's a tree in the garden. And God said, you may eat of all the fruit of the garden, except for the mountain tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And there is that tree in this case. If you look hard enough, you will find the answers to the workbook on the internet. Don't do it. Because you will rob yourself of learning. And make sure that you are transparent and confessional with each other so that you may hold each other accountable. It will ruin your Greek experience if you go and get the answers off the internet, because you won't learn what's happening. We want the struggle. We want the difficulty so that we can come back together and encourage each other and seal the deal in class. Right? Does everybody understand that? Okay. Do not partake of that food. Okay. Vocabulary cards. Let me take a break. I use an app. You can do this. Store-bought, make your own, or there is a really cool app that's called, there's several of them. The one I use is just called Flashcards. Okay. And let's see if I can do your phone. Okay. Okay, I'll create this out of the break, because it's really cool. I'll show you this app. There's an app. The source material is a website called Quizlet.com. Quizlet.com. Okay. Quizlet.com is a website where people deposit all their flashcards for everything you can ever think of, from elementary through college, whatever. It's on Quizlet.com. If you want to learn artists and paintings and things like that, you can do that. So on Quizlet.com, there are people that have already data inputted Mounce's vocabulary that follows the cards. Okay, so you can on Quizlet.com, just on your Safari browser, you can study Mounce Chapter 4 on Quizlet.com. And they have games that you can do, different ways to use the vocabulary cards, or you can do larger chunks. You can do like chapters 4 through 20. People have made all these different combinations of it. I have gone in there and combined together different lists and then edited them because I found mistakes. Up to, I think, something like 550 cards. But it's a master list of like 500 cards. So you wouldn't want to study that one. But that's when I go to Talbot. They say, be ready for a quiz from vocab word number 3 through 500. So that's why I have to study all those vocab cards through number 500. But there's all different arrangements. Now, Quizlet is a website, and you can use the website. There's a Quizlet app to access the website, and you can search for mounts. But there's another app that I use called Flashcards, and I like it because of the interface. And I'll show you guys when we get back from break. I'll have that up on the screen just because it's really cool. Okay. Any questions? Yes.
The Quizlet app and stuff, can you go through and look for specific words in case you're wanting to copy it onto flashcards?
It will, the people that created that set of cards, they'll be in order. You can tell your app to mix them or not.
Okay, so it's not going to be just like a random 500 character
order? No, they'll have like just chapter 4, or just chapter 5, or chapter 4 through 8. They're in there a bunch of times over and over again. So, yeah, you could just look at chapter 4 vocab cards, and then you could copy them from there. But if you're making your own cards, I'd probably just copy them from the book. Yeah. When we get into the grammar next, you'll see how the vocab looks in the grammar. Yeah, so that'll be the next thing. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to start looking at the book. So if you guys don't have the book yet, make sure you're sitting next to someone and kind of look on and everything. In the book. Maybe I'll have it on the screen too. So let's take a 10-minute break. It's that we'll go by that clock. So let's be back at 2:30. Okay? All right. Is it right on?
Yeah.
2:30. When you're learning vocab, vocabulary cards are never, ever the primary way to learn. If you try to be successful learning your vocab with vocab cards, you will fail. But all vocabulary cards are really for is reinforcing what you've already studied. So it's just a way to keep it constantly in your brain. Writing the vocab cards, that's one way of learning them. But using the cards is only a way to reinforce. The real nitty-gritty way to learn vocab is to write them down over and over again. And what I would do is just write the Greek word over and over again, and then write the translation over and over again. And by writing it a whole bunch of times, that was what was getting it in my brain. Then I'd come back to the flashcards, and the flashcards would then just remind me to reinforce what I worked so hard on. But you don't want the flashcards to be the primary way of learning. You want to have written them at some point. So even if you buy the store-bought cards, make sure you write on a sheet of paper the vocab for that week out several times before you start using your vocabulary week to help you reinforce it. Okay? Alright, so what we want to do right now is we want to go into to the grammar. On our schedule, we're looking at chapters 1 and 2. So let's see if I can switch back here. Hey, open up your grammar to the table of contents. Let's get a little bit of an orientation to the grammar itself.
Sure.
Okay, so if you don't have a book, I remember that I cut a book up one time and I scanned it. My documents were here. I just slashed the book. And so I have a PDF of it. Okay, let's do a little orientation here. Part 1 is all of our background stuff. Greek language, learning Greek, alphabet, pronunciation, punctuation, and everyone say this word, syllabification.
Syllabification.
Yeah, that's dealing with the syllables. I just like that word, syllabification. And then, once we go past introduction, we go into nouns. This is where we will spend this semester, is nouns. So, He gives us an introduction to English nouns, that's good, just in case you forgot. Then we get into what's called the cases, the nominative and accusative, genitive and dative. Everyone say nominative.
Nominative.
Yeah, no. Those are fancy words. Nominative is your subject case. All right? Accusative. Everyone say accusative.
Accusative.
Accusative is your object case, like your direct object. Then we have prepositions. Ami is the verb to be. Jesus said, ego ami. What does that mean?
I am.
So, ami is the verb to be. I exist. And so, that will be the one verb that we talk about. The verb to be is important. Because how many times do you say is?
A whole lot.
So, the car is green. So you have to know is. So that's why we get the verb to be Amy. Adjectives. Then right here it says track one or track two. At that point, you can follow the grammar two different ways. Dr. Mounts wanted to compensate for the people that taught Greek the old way, where they would do Greek, they would do nouns and verbs together and mix it all up, and your brain would hurt. And so, the old way of learning Greek, you just went right into both verbs and nouns back and forth. And so for some of the old school people, he added what's called track two. And if you look in your workbook, you'll see it diverges and you can follow workbook assignments for track two. We will not be doing track two. So make sure that in your workbook, you don't do exercise 15 on track two, because it will not make any sense to you. So we're on track one. We are following the book the way it was to be written. When I was in college and school of ministry here, we learned Greek the old way. Lots of memorizing. It was not fun. And I'm sorry I can't share that experience with you. But Dr. Mounts has focused more in this grammar on recognition. Rather than memorizing all of these different forms and how it inflects, remember what does inflection mean?
Change.
How the word, the forms change. Rather than memorizing all those changes, Dr. Mount says, if you learn why the words change, you'll be able to recognize the forms rather than memorizing them. Okay, much, much easier way to learn. So when I got to seminary, I had to undo, like Yoda said, I had to unlearn what I had learned. You have to see Star Wars, right? Oh, okay. So, I got to this style, and I'm so happy for it. So we'll do track one. And then we go into third declension. First and second personal pronouns, and then autos. Autos is third declension. Excuse me, third person pronoun. Demonstrative pronouns and adjectives. Chapter 14 is a relative pronoun. And then, the third part of the book deals with verbs. So you'll see on our syllabus, aside from September 1st being Labor Day, that November 24th, we were to start this section. Introduction of verbs, and then chapter 16, the present active indicative. And then we would have cut it off right there. That would have been Christmas time. So I'm not sure if we'll actually make it into the verb section or not. It may just be where we pick up in Greek 2. If everyone's feeling good and we're doing really well, maybe we'll meet our goal of getting into the present active indicative. But you can see the focus is going to be on nothing but nouns. That's a lot easier. And then next semester we go into verbs. So what happens in your homework if you have a verbal form? Because one of the other great things I like about Dr. Mounts is that our homework is actual scripture verses. In the old way of learning Greek, there are made up sentences that kind of sounded like scripture. You're like, this doesn't sound quite right. And but they were trying to create sentences that you could do based upon what you knew. Mounts uses actual scripture. The upside of that is it's really exciting. You start seeing stuff from the Bible right away. The downside is, as if you know that verse, you might give me the New King James translation of it instead of giving me your own Greek translation. Right? I don't want the New King James translation. I want your translation. But if you have verse, what are we going to do? We have a covered verse. Well, what Mouse will do in the homework, and you'll see this in the workbook, is if he comes to a verbal form and we don't know what that is, he gives it to you. So you just skip right past that, and he gives you the translation for that word, and you just keep focusing on nouns and pronouns. So it's great. You get to actually use Scripture. Okay, so this is next semester. And there's the Fiji mermaids, right? Participles. Those are the verbal nouns. You guys are never going to forget that. And then next semester, if we're lucky, we'll make it all the way through chapter 36. If we don't, then you'll be smart enough to understand it anyway. Okay, so that's the overview of the table of contents. These are charts and paradigms way back in the back of the book. Right here on page 394 in your book, and this is something you want to be familiar with, turn to page 394. Page 394, you want to earmark that, because that is the beginning of Dr. Mounce's simplified lexicon, or dictionary. Okay? Now, how are the words arranged? They are arranged according to the Greek alphabet. So, what comes first is alpha. And so all the words that start with an alpha and then beta. And so that's how you find words in here. This will be when you're working in vocabulary. If you can I borrow this real quick? If you look at on alpha there, if you go down 1, 2, 3, 4, what's the fifth word? Anyone take a guess? Agape. And you'll see agape and then a comma. And then you'll see a dash, you know, it looks like an N and an S, right? Okay, that's the alternate ending of the word. That's why it's a suffix. That's why it's got that little dash there. And then you'll have a comma. And then you'll have what looks like another N there. Okay, that's showing you which definite article goes with this word. What's a definite article? In English, it's the. I ate the apple. If I ate an apple, that's an indefinite article, right? And you pick it up, like, the apple. That's showing you what definite article goes with it. It shows you the translation, right? Love. And then, what's 116? How many times? And then, chapter 6, what does that mean?
That's
where you learned it as a vocabulary word in chapter 6. That's kind of neat to know that. And then N-1B, that's the Klingon section. That is the morphology key. So if you really wanted to know how this word changes in all of its glory, in all the different ways, understand how this root operated, that's the key. You can buy a whole other book from Dr. Mouse on the morphology of every Greek word. And we don't care about that. So, anyway, that's what that is. Okay, now, so that's your lexicon. When you're doing your homework and you're doing translation, you will probably be using this lexicon quite a bit. To go, oh, I know that word, but I can't remember which chapter I learned that word in, which vocabulary word. And if you go through all your flashcards that have all the chapters on, you might have to figure that out so you can get the translation. Or you can just go to your lexicon and you can look up the word according to how it's spelled. Okay? Now, are these words in the lexicon inflected? What does the word inflection mean?
Change.
Change. The words change. Are any of these words inflected? Yes, they're not. These are what we call the lexical form. So if you wanted to find what the word we means, like we ran to the store, would you look up the word we? Why?
You would look up the word I.
You would look up the word I. Why?
Because that's the base form.
That is the lexical form of the word. You might have I, we, what would be, what would be the, those are both subjects, what would be the singular of objective form of I?
Me.
Me. Throw the ball to me. Right? So I and me and we, what would be the plural form of the objective form of the first person? Us. See why English is crazy? There's no root connection with all these words. I, we, us, me. Maybe me and we sounds similar. But all of that, those are all inflected forms. The word you would find in the dictionary is the word I. And that's how, thinking about the Greek dictionary. So, you might have the word for love, but the word for love could be the subject, it could be the object, it could be singular, it could be plural, and those would all have a different ending on them for the inflection. But if you wanted to know what the word meant, you would look up agape. That's the lexicon. Okay? So that's the lexicon. Alright. Back to the front of the book. You can read the preface on your own over Labor Day weekend. There's lots of abbreviations. Here's a little bookworm professor. You can read about that, little tidbits he likes. This is why, this is the homeschooling edition, because he's a professor bookworm. And very academic professors, that probably really irritates them, because it doesn't look very academic to have a drawing in your book, but that's okay. Okay, the rationale statement. We don't really have time today, but this is like the goals of the book, why it's a tool for ministry. He wants you to feel encouraged. I want you to feel encouraged, too. So you can read that part of encouraged. Okay, memorization. Rote memorization for most people is difficult. It makes this on Roman numeral 15. Rote memorization for most people is difficult. It makes language learning a chore and often results in students forgetting the language. I will do everything I can to keep the amount of memorization to a minimum. For example, in the noun system, you will only learn one paradigm and eight rules instead of memorizing dozens and dozens of charts. As I often say in the website lectures, you're welcome. He's not being mean to me when he says that, if you know Dr. Matt. So that's a big praise of the Lord. The old grammars, it was charts and charts and paradigms and paradigms, and we're not doing that. Now we learn like one chart, and then we learn all the rules that go with it. So if you know the rules and you have that one chart, you can figure, you play Sherlock and you can figure everything out. That's great. I know you appreciate that as much as I do, but it's great. Okay. So we will, like when we get to that one chart, that will be something you want to write a bunch of times and memorize it. And then when you sit down for your exam, on the back of your paper, you'll want to write that chart up. Actually, the chart will be on the exam, so you'll have it anyway. But, okay. There's this technique thing. Let's just skip that. We're talking about some of the online resources here. Flashworks, that's his program you can get off of his website for his flashcards. You can do that if you want, instead of going to Quizlet. Kind of looks like that. Okay. Okay, chapter 1. We're going to actually start talking about Greek. Greek language has a long and rich history stretching all the way from the 13th century to the present. The earliest form of the language is called Linear B. The form of Greek used by writers from Homer through Plato is called Classical. It was a marvelous form of the language, capable of exact expression and subtle nuances. Its alphabet was derived from the Phoenicians, as was the Hebrew. So this is more evidence for the Tower of Babel. If you go back and you look at the just even the alphabet of these languages, you start to see similarities in them. Even though Hebrew is a totally different language than Greek, you still see that the first letter of Hebrew is Aleph. And so there are a lot of similarities. I'm going to skip down here. As the Greek language spread across the world and met other languages, it was altered. It happens in any language, like how many languages have influenced English, German, all these different languages. The dialects also interacted with each other. Eventually, this adaptation resulted in what we call Koine, or Common Greek. So, it was a simplified form of classic Greek. And Koine Greek, and there's a page, I think it's a page in the New Testament, or this is a lectionary. This is a devotional lectionary from the book of Matthew and John, written in Koine Greek. Okay, so Koine Greek, or Common Greek, by the time of Jesus, was the language that was used throughout the Mediterranean world. So local peoples would have their local languages and dialects, but for commerce and things like that, Greek became the language where they could interact with each other. And that had to do, because of the spread of the Greek Empire and with the Roman Empire, it continued to be the commonly used language. If you take the history of Western civilization, you know, as the empire kind of cut in two, you have the Eastern Empire and the Western Empire. The Western Empire was centered around what capital?
Rome.
And the Eastern Empire was centered around Istanbul, right? And then it became Istanbul later. Now, the Eastern Empire continued to use Koine Greek as its primary language. And what was the church that grew out of that Eastern Empire? Eastern Orthodox Church, which Greek Orthodox, Russian Orthodox. And Greek continued to be the language that they used for their liturgy and their worship and all of that. What language did the Western Empire switch to?
Latin.
So, in the 200s, the 100s, and 300s, the Western Empire went to Latin. So, what did they do with their Greek New Testament? They translated it into Latin, where the Eastern Empire continued to use Greek. They continued to use Greek predominantly all the way up until the 15th, 16th, 1700s. And so, if you're continuing to use Greek and you're continuing to keep copies of your Bible, you can imagine in the Eastern Empire that the amount of manuscripts that we have, thousands and thousands and thousands. And as we, with archaeology and discoveries, we continue to find Greek manuscripts from the time when they were, just after they were written, all the way up to the 15th and 16th and 1700s. Copies and copies and copies. Because they used Greek there. So, we're in the West, they switched over to Latin. Okay. Here's some goals, and we don't have time for that. That's Labor Day reading. Here's memorization, more like talking about things to help you memorize. You want to read that? Let me just read this little paragraph. Exercises. The greatest motivation for learning Greek comes during the homework assignments because most of the exercises are drawn from the New Testament. You're constantly reminded why you were learning the language. I've tried to point out in the footnotes, whenever your knowledge of Greek helps you exegetically or devotionally to better understand the verse's meaning. So that's kind of fun. That makes your homework more exciting.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Are we studying out of a certain manuscript when we do?
That's another question.
Just answering.
That's another class. The Greek senses that are in here, sometimes they're simplified a little bit, but for the most part, they would be what you would find if you opened up the Greek New Testament. And the Greek New Testament that we have today is published that all the translations use, like the ESV, NIV, NASB, the ones that they all use today, is in its 28th edition. And the reason it's in an edition is because as we discover manuscripts, everything from a little accent gets, scrutinized. And so they're constantly examining whether or not we're as close to the original as possible. And what happens is they put the New Testament, and then down below they publish all of the homework that goes in to determine that. So when they say that we're like at 99.8% of being accurate to what the apostles wrote, right? All of the background of all those manuscripts you'll find in the bottom half of the New Testament page. Right? And that's called an apparatus. So we feel extremely confident, because every time we find more manuscripts, it continues to affirm what we have. And so you can look at all the technical reasons for that. So the text that we work from is kind of unilaterally agreed upon, that this is what we wrote. And we read Josh McDowell and his books and talk about the accuracy of the text. We're all working from that same Greek text. Now, Bible scholars, when they translate, they'll take into consideration all of that nuance. Like, why did this monk from the 8th century change this word? Why did he do that? Right? Was he trying to fix it? Was he trying to simplify it? We don't know. But they still keep track of all of that. And then they put that into the notes for you. It's kind of like studying DNA. You're studying the Greek Testament. There's this long chain of the history of copying the text that goes all the way back to the original. What's the, what was the UK Bible correction? What do we call the originals? The autographs. So that's what we call, which we don't have, but we come within 30, 40 years of it. Right? So, yes, to answer your original question is, there's a consensus across the board for what New Testament we're using. And when you come to your homework assignments, if you were to look that verse up in the Greek New Testament, you'd see it there. We'll talk more about the translation assignments, because there's a key at the end of every workbook assignment of which verse you're working with. He doesn't give you the reference at the time when you do the homework. He does that at the end of the workbook assignment, because he doesn't want you to have the temptation of opening up to Romans 3 and checking it. Does that help you? Okay. Alright, so let's skip that. He's telling you about being a consistent. Partners are good. Discipline is good. See this coin? This coin? This is really cool. The Greek coins, you're saying this up for, this is a fun one. The coins at the time of Jesus were very regional. They were done per city-state or per area. So you're in Ephesus would have a currency, Colossae would have a currency. And we know a lot about the time of the Bible based upon coins. Who's on the coin? Where was the coin done? In fact, Colossae, to this day, has never been excavated. So you can walk on Colossae, it's like a hill. But what they have found is they found coins. And so they learned a lot from what they discovered just in the coins. One of the best collections of actual coins from antiquity is here in Southern California. There's a place that you may want to go. It's a really cool trip. It's free. You've heard of the Getty Museum, right? Over in Los Angeles. That's where Mr. Getty Park Collections. But down on the coast is another place called the Getty Villa. So maybe you may have heard of that or not. And the Getty Villa is one of the largest collections in the world of Greco-Roman artifacts. And the coin collection is awesome. And they will let you take your camera without a flash and put it right up on the glass and take pictures of the coins. And you can go through the area or the list of all the Caesars just from the coins. It's a lot of fun. So you can go take your own pictures just like that. The Getty Villa. It's a lot of fun there. They just they have sculptures and things like that from the time of Christ, and you won't see anything like that unless you go like all the way to Greece. All right, here we go. Chapter 3. What he'll do at the beginning of each chapter is tell us what we're going to learn, and at the end of the chapter, he'll review what we've learned. So in chapter 3, we're going to learn to write and pronounce the alphabet. We're also going to learn about reading marks. And note this, footnotes in the grammar are not necessary to learn. Everyone say, footnotes are not necessary.
Footnotes are not necessary.
Okay, if you read them, you might get sad. Because they can be intense. they're not necessarily, although they often are very interesting. That's true, they are. The footnotes in the workbook, though, are important. The workbook footnotes are very simple. It'll give you help for what you're doing. Okay, the Greek alphabet has 24 letters. See, and this is where the footnotes hurt. There were several more. But they dropped out of use before the classical. See, well, that's not important, right? That just makes you feel overwhelmed. So, there's 24 letters. At first, it's only important to learn the English name and the small letters and pronunciation. The transliterations will help. What's a transliteration? Transliteration, if you read the footnote, would be writing out how the word sounds in English form. So writing out agape would look like, I'm going to lose my pen. What's in this pocket? If you were going to write out agape in a transliterated way, in Greek, you know, it'd look like this. Okay? But if we wrote that out in English, it would be agape. Yes, but there would have to be some kind of accent with it. Agape. I don't know what the accent is. You know when you have those big, huge Webster dictionaries and they've got all the sound? This one right here? You remember that from?
It's like an apostrophe. It's like, oh yeah, it's like
up from left to right.
Like that?
Up from left to right.
Oh, that's
yeah,
okay.
Up from left to right.
Like this?
Yeah.
Oh, well, okay, that looks like great. Yeah, when you were in third grade, right, you learned some of those sound, vowel, sound marks. And so transliteration will do that because you can have long and short sounds in English, right? But we don't really care about transliteration. We don't want to deal with transliteration. In the old way of Greek, you learned the Greek words and you learned how to transliterate it. We just want to learn how to read the Greek, and that's it. Okay. Look at the middle of this paragraph. There is some disagreement as to the correct pronunciation of a few of the letters. These are marked in the footnotes. I've chosen the standard pronunciations that will help you learn the language the easiest. So what should you go with a very standard way of pronouncing things? And if you get, if someone comes along and says, oh, you know, they start getting all technical with you, that's where the book of Proverbs comes in. You know, it says, don't engage in folly, foolishness. I say, that's very nice. I appreciate how smart you are. And so, you move on. There's certain words that you will hear me, you'll expect me to say a certain way, But because of Dr. Sauer at Moody, who was from the South, there's certain words I say weird. And that's because I heard Dr. Sauer say them a weird way a lot of times. And so it's not super, super technical. If you go, there's a general way. And if you go and download, you can, off of technia.com, you can hear Dr. Mounts read the vocabulary. That's the secret way. However, Dr. Mounts does it. Okay. Notice many similarities. This is on the next page. Notice many similarities among the Greek and English letters, not only in shape and sound, but also in their respective order. The Greek alphabet can be broken down into sections. It will parallel in English for a while, then be different, and then come back and parallel again. You can kind of see where the divisions are when you start reading through them. So here we have the actual name of the letter. We have English and Greek. Here's the transliterated.
I was right.
See? That makes me feel good. Because I don't really focus on transliteration, but that's encouraging. So the transliterated letter, we don't care about this. Here's the capital form, but what did Dr. Mount say we're going to focus on? The lowercase, right here. And then there is a pronunciation chart. And in your Bible, you can't tell up here as well, but this projector is so much better than the last one, that you can see the color code, if you look in your book, that what the pronunciation that it's focusing on there. Okay, if you open up your workbook side by side with this, you'll see your first assignment. I think it's exercise 3. Exercise 3, you want to have that open right now, and a pencil. We only use pencil in this class. No pen. It's an instant mark and a huge pen. We'll bring a pencil sharpener to class if you have to. Or a mechanical pencil. Yes. You get to engage in learning experience right now.
I have a pencil.
Oh, sweet.
Does anyone have an extra pencil?
I do.
I'm that guy.
Do you have an extra pencil?
Yes.
Okay, I will let you use a little pen today. Okay, so one of your first assignments is exercise 3, and learning how to write the letters. So, what is our first letter? Everyone repeat after me. Alpha.
Alpha.
Okay, so here is the English writing of the word. Here's the Greek writing of the word. But this column right here is the one we're focused on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's the letter you want to learn right there. Alpha. Ah. So, ah as in father. See, there's a footnote. We won't go down there. Okay. So, it tells us all kinds of cool information about this that we don't want to learn right now. So, in your workbook, you see for your homework, the assignment. The way that I draw the alpha is I start, if I've got my lines like this, this takes you back. Remember the chalk ones that you do like that? We're doing lowercase, right? So I'm going to start up here high, and I'm going to drop down, and then I'm going to touch the line and come back down like that. Alpha. So it looks like it's the same way in your workbook. Some people, there's different ways to write it. This is the font type that we're going to use. Alpha. So in your homework, you're just doing that a whole bunch of times. Kind of looks like an ichthus, doesn't it? Like a fish symbol that's really chubby. Alpha. The next letter is beta. Say beta.
Beta.
Beta. That's the B sound. The way that works is we start below the line and we come up halfway and then we curve up like that. I think in the past I've written it with a little bit of curve on it. You don't have to complete the assignment right now. You're going to be doing this over break. I just want you to see where you can get started. Alright, so say alpha, beta.
Alpha, beta, beta.
Yes. Alright, next is gamma. Say gamma.
Gamma.
Gamma makes a g sound. It looks like a G, doesn't it? Well, it's going to start halfway down, come down, and it has this little bit of this loop here. Maybe mine's a little big. This is not, the size of your loop is not totally important. Look at his font, it's closer together. It's more like that. That's gamma. Alright, let's say those three together. Alpha, beta, gamma. Ready?
Alpha, beta, gamma.
Why do we do that? We're bringing other senses into the learning experience. We're writing, we're reading, and then we're speaking. That's helpful. Alright. After alpha, beta, gamma, we have delta, like the airline. Delta, it's looks like it's kind of like a D. It has a D sound. It comes around and back up and has this little tail at the top. So I start here, I come down, around, and up. Just write that a whole bunch of times in your workbook. Okay, sir. So note we need an eraser. Okay. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta. Let's say that together. Ready?
Alpha, beta, gamma, delta.
All right. We come to our second vowel. What was our first vowel?
Alpha.
Now we're coming to our second vowel, the F sound. This is an eta. An eta. And an eta, lowercase, we make it, we come down, we curve, and we come around like that. Almost like a backwards three. So this is an eta. Some people draw them like this. What's that?
Isn't that epsilon?
Sorry, yes. This is the pneumonia talking. Okay, start over. Epsilon.
Epsilon.
Oh. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm going to make it. All right. Ada is coming later. Sorry. I'm excited about Ada. Epsilon. Okay. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon. So let's start over here. Epsilon is our F sound. Ada is going to be our A sound. See, here's epsilon and here's eta. That's the one that looked like an N, right? Look at the transliterated form of it. They're both a what? An E. But one is short and one is long. So they're both out. We're doing epsilon. F. F. As in met. So that one, it looks like the backwards three. Epsilon. Like I said, some people will do it this way. I do it the first way because it's all one motion. I don't have to pick up my writing device. Just go backwards through. Epsilon. All right, let's say those together. Ready?
Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon.
All right. In your grammar, learning this, that is our first division. So with your pencil, you don't want to write a pen in your grammar. With your pencil, write a line underneath epsilon right here. The easiest way to learn this vocabulary is to break it into
vocabulary.
It's a long day. The easiest way to learn your alphabet is to break it into sections. So that was your first section, alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon. So writing them out, you probably want to write that first section a bunch of times. Right?
Then we go into the next section, and you'll see that they kind of have a similar sound to them. Yeah, the next one is called a zeta. Zeta. It's a... Let me move this up. Somebody check something. Yeah. Okay. Zeta, eta, theta, yellow, kappa. Alright. Zeta is kind of a Z sound to it. Z. It has a little bit of a D in there too. Zeta. And so everyone say zeta.
Zeta.
Yeah. Now the way to draw this is it starts up here in the top, just below it, kind of curves around, comes down, and curves underneath. So we come down and curve underneath. That's zeta. Zeta. Let's say that all those together. Ready? Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, zeta. Yes.
Did you say that epsilon was a vowel?
Yes, it is. Yeah. Another thing you could do to help you remember the vowels is you might want to go and put like a square around them or a circle or something like that. You want to notate the vowels. Or if you have a yellow highlighter or something. So alpha is a vowel. Epsilon is a vowel. And our next character, eta, is a vowel. Eta, A, as in obey. Eta, eta. So, here's an example, agape, eta. So it looks like a little bit like an N. That comes down here, comes back up, but the tail goes below the line for eta. Eta. Alright, so in this just this section, say it with me. Zeta, eta. Ready? Zeta, eta. Next one. Theta. Theta is your TH sound. That one is going to start at the top, come down, up and around, kind of like an O, a big one, but it has a line across the middle. Theta. That one looks like an egg. Theta. Theta is the first letter in what word? Theos. Which means what?
God.
God. God. We use that word a lot in the Bible. So, if you take one of my theology classes, instead of writing God, what will I write?
Theos.
Theta.
Theta.
It's a theta. That was a common shortcut in the early church for God. It was the theta. Okay. So let's say zeta, eta, theta together. Ready? Zeta, eta, theta. Zeta did not eat a theta. All right. Our next vowel is iota. Iota. And it can have a long and a short sound. And that's why over here in intrigue, there's a footnote here, but both of these I's are lit up. So this will be one of the letters that you might hear my Dr. Sauer pronunciation coming out sometimes. But iota, it can be like a I sound, or sometimes an I sound. In classical Greek, you'll hear more of an I sound. So say, oh, what fraternity were you in? Phi, chi, psi, right? These Greek letters like that. And that's more of the classical Greek. For us, it would be like phi, chi, psi. So our I sound is a little bit different. So that's the iota. And that looks like an I. But what's missing? There's no dot. And it kind of curves up here at the bottom.
Does yours have a curve on your board?
Yeah. Okay. So let's start with zeta. Ready? Zeta, eta, theta, iota, or iota. Iota. Yes.
Is that a vowel?
That is a vowel. You can square that or circle that. Okay. Then we have kappa. And kappa, it's like a K. Kappa. And it draw it like a K. I draw it this way. I draw a line down, and then I draw a line up and a line like that. There could be a way to make less strokes, I guess. But this is my habit. That's my kappa. As in kitchen. Okay. So, epsilon, zeta, eta, theta, iota, kappa. That would be another division for learning. So I would put a line under the kappa right here. Easier to learn it in chunks.
Where'd the first line go? Under the
kappa. Straight down. Okay, so my kappa would be like this, and then like that. All right, the next letter is lambda. If you're a nerd, you knew lambda, lambda, lambda. If you remember that movie or not. It's a little bit before my time, but... Okay, that was the Revenge of the Nerds. That was their fraternity. I just know that because it's Greek. Okay, so... The lambda starts up here, comes down, and kind of curves at the line, and then you finish it with a left to right. So it starts down, comes to the right, and then a little leg to hold it up. So it starts down here, comes like that. Everyone say lambda.
Lambda.
Good. Lambda.
Lambda.
What comes after L in English?
Lambda.
M, right? Well, in Greek, it's similar. After lambda comes mu. Mu, and it kind of looks like an M. It starts below the line. It almost looks like a cursive form. So it starts below the line, comes up, comes down, and finishes with a little tail. That's mu. As a mother. After your sound comes your sound, just like English. You're new. Lambda mu nu. The new looks like a V. It has a sharp point at the bottom. That's your nu. So mu, nu. Everyone say nu.
Nu.
Nu. So it looks like a V, but it's not. It's an N sound. Alright, so say, starting with lambda together, lambda, mu, nu. Now we have something that's different. Xi. Xi. If it was classical, we'd say Xi. But this is Xi. So kind of an X sound to it. As an axiom. Xi is kind of a funky character. Starts up here at the top with a little curl. Then makes a big loop. It's almost like a giant epsilon. Comes down again here, and then wraps underneath. So a little curl, looping, a little curl underneath. like a giant epsilon that's fancy. Xi.
Say
Xi. Sound.
I think
X. Almost like a X. It's almost like a XS sound. X. Xi. Lambda Mu Nu Xi. I'm going to go back to one that everyone's familiar with. The vowel. Omicron. Looks like an O. And you write it like an O. Easy. Omicron. You can see it when your mouth makes the shape of the sound. Ah. Omicron. Omicron. Ah. Ah. So it's your short O sound. Which word is this? Who said logos? No, it's not logos. So we are in the logos world. And I would do pastor's respect, effectively pastor Chuck, say logos. And then I would say, that's right, Chuck, logos. Just for fun. So logos, English, it would be a long sound. We have another O following an O right now. But not in Greek. Plenty of Greek. Okay. All right. After A comes P. Classical would be Pi. Point A, P. Xi and P. Phi, Ki. Those are all the Koine pronunciations, not the I sound. Okay, so what this looks like in math, you said pi, it's the two lines with the wavy line like that. His technically goes up and lower like that. Mine, from years of writing it, it's kind of a squiggly. P. Alright, let's start with lambda. Ready? Lambda, mu, nu, xi, omicron, p. Let's see, where do you want to, we could break that. Lambda, mu, nu, xi, you might draw a line there, and then go omicron, p. After P comes your sound. Rho is the name of the word, letter. Rho. Rho is your sound. Your R sound is in rod. And it starts down below the line, comes up halfway, and circles back. That's rho. Omicron P, rho. In English, what comes after sound? Right? What do we call the character in Greek that makes the sound? Sigma. Say sigma.
Sigma.
Now, this is a unique symbol because it can be drawn two different ways. When it is in the middle or the front of a word, it's drawn one way. When it's at the end of a word, we call it the final sigma, and it's drawn a second way. Where else do we draw that? So, regular sigma kind of looks like an omicron with a tail up there. That's regular sigma. So if it's at the front of the word or anywhere in the middle of the word, it's going to have this omicron look with a little tail, sigma. If it's the last letter on a particular word, it's a final sigma. And then it looks like more like an S, like we're used to this sound. But it's It's a weird looking mess. It starts up here, comes down, and then has a tail. So it's like a top heavy S. This is final sigma. So here's regular or sigma, and here's final sigma. So in your homework, you just want to write out a little bit. Well, it's got a, actually got a separate line for each. So. Okay. After the sound in English comes what sound? Right? In Greek, that's that character is called the tau. The tau. And it kind of has the same squiggly line as the P, but it's just one line. And here it has a little tail. That's the tau. Rho, sigma, tau. We're almost done. Go sit and tell. Yeah. So you might break it right there again. Or after the tau. So after the tau, we have another vowel, the upsilon. Upsilon. That's our sound. Upsilon. It's like our U. So it comes down and it has a curved bottom. Right? So you might confuse these two symbols. What are the differences between them?
Curved bottom
and round. What is this? New. This is our sound, right? That's a consonant. Here's a vowel, upsilon. Upsilon has a curved bottom. Upsilon. That was my wife. Okay. All right. After upsilon, we're in a home stretch. This is our last grouping here. We have our sound, kind of a pH sound. Our phi. Everyone say phi. Classical Greek, you would say phi. This is phi. Alright? It looks like I usually draw a little bit bigger than the dotted than the dashed line, like about like right here. Oh, no, maybe not. Not like that. And then it has a line through it, all the way from top to bottom. That's phi. There we go. Alright. I've almost made it all the way through the alphabet. After the phi comes he. It's kind of a hard CH, like lock, like the Loch Ness Monster. Key. So this, it looks somewhat like an X. It starts above, just around the dot, the dash line, and comes down below, and then crosses. So I make my first line left or right with a curve on it, and then a straight line like that. That's my key. Phi, key, and then psi. Psi. It's kind of a P and an S sound together. Psi. Psi. Okay, and lips. That would be how you know how it sounds, lips. So psi is almost like a triton. It has this. Looks like an upsilon here, and a line coming through it that way. So we're going upsilon with a line. That's psi. Phi, chi, psi. And then Jesus is the alpha and the what?
Omega.
Omega. So your last vowel is omega. And it looks like a W. It looks like an W. Omega. Oh. Alright. Let's go back to the top here. See this list again. Are you guys ready? Here we go. Alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, zeta, eta, theta, yoda, kappa, lambda, mu, nu, xi, omicron, p, rho, sigma, tau, upsilon, phi, chi, psi, omega. Very good. All right, here's some notes about writing the letters. Notice how those look like their English counterparts. There are four letters that are translated by two. We looked at that already. Oops. And don't confuse these. We already talked about that. Eta, nu, rho, chi, and omega. They might look like another English symbol, but they're not. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I was wondering if you could just point out all the vowels.
Yes, I can. Number five, right here. The vowels in Greek are...
There you go.
Alpha, epsilon, eta, iota, omicron, upsilon, and omega. So you might want to go back in your master list and circle each of those or highlight them or something. Remember here, there's two forms of sigma. Regular sigma, which is at the beginning or somewhere else, and then if it's the final character, it's final sigma. Okay, he's got a little thing about here pronouncing letters out loud over and over again. We were trying to do that a little bit. All right, this is important. Number four. Gamma, right? Gamma usually has a hard G sound, as in get. However, when it is immediately followed by one of these characters, a gamma, kappa, chi, or xi, it's pronounced as an N sound. So if you have gamma, gamma, like that, the first one will sound like G. What will the second one sound like? Hmm. That is called a nasal or gamma nasal. For example, the word angelos. What do you think angelos means?
Angel.
Angel, right? It's pronounced angelos, from which I got that wrong. The N sound comes with the first gamma, not the second one. Okay, so you can see that in angelos. See how this is an N sound? From which the word angel, the gamma pronounced like the N is called the gamma nasal. So if you have gamma gamma, the first gamma actually has an N sound to it. Or one of these other characters that follow it. We'll see that when we start getting into words and using the words and stuff.
So if they're together, it's always going to be like that?
The first gamma is going to have an N sound.
There's never a point where there's two and it has the same.
Good job. Okay, alpha and iota are two of our vowels. Can be either long or short. Epsilon and omicron are always short. Well, eta, what does eta look like? Eta and omega are always long. Long and short refer to the relative length of time that is required to pronounce it. Ah, or oh. Omega takes a longer time. This is not
or you're going to get quiz level. All of this. And then this is cut really fast. You're only going to get quiz on being able to write up to the actual alphabet. Yes.
Is that
Ada
and
Omega? Ada? Did I get that wrong? No, it's right here. Number 5. Ada and Omega are always long. At this time of the day, I don't trust myself in what I said. Okay, breathing marks. Greek has 2 breathing marks. Every word beginning with a vowel, or if it begins with a row. What does a row look like? Like that, right? Or we draw it this way. That's the er sound, right? So if it has a vowel or a row at the beginning of the word, it will have a breathing mark. Here are the 2 kinds of breathing marks. Rough breathing is placed like this backwards apostrophe right here. Placed over the first vowel and adds a sound, an H sound to the word. So, the word that he drew up there, let's draw it here, that has a rough breather, is upsilon P epsilon rho, and a rough breather. Okay? If we don't add a rough breather, how do we say this? Ooh, pair. Okay? But we add the rough breather as a sound. Who pair? Why they would do that is a really interesting conversation. That's like one of those footnotes. It was basically to try to separate this word from this word and not confuse them, to make it look like one long word. So they would add a rough breather in to make sure that you syllabified, you broke it there. A smooth breathing is placed over the first vowel and is not pronounced. So here we have the word for apostle, apostolos. So, apostolos. Right? Apostolos has a breather because every vowel that starts a word is going to have a breathing mark. But it's a smooth breathing mark. And it has no sound. It's just so you know that's where the word starts. So, apostolos. Apostolos. Smooth and rough breathers. If you forget to put a breathing mark, I will not mark you on. Don't worry about that. But that's just so you know, if you see this, you know that it has an H sound. And then just so you know as a reference, if the word begins with a capital, the breather is placed out in front of it, like the word for Isaac here, because you can't really put it on top. That's more of like a Microsoft Word issue than anything. Okay? Now, this, you may feel like you're trying to swim and stay afloat and all this information is quickly developing you. Don't stress. All we're worried about at this point is what? Really just the alphabet. Okay. This is just background information. A lot of this is almost like osmosis of gaining an awareness of all this, okay? Yes, you may.
If the row sound has the hard breathing, how does that sound?
Her. The sound in front of it.
Sure, it's the row.
Yeah, rough with a row. Okay, on your homework it says, under grammar, what are the 7 vowels? You guys see that? You guys know the answer to that, right? What does this one say?
We need to find the 2 different sounds.
Okay, you guys know remember the answer to that one, right? Okay. This is number 2 on page 4 of your workbook. When do you find the 2 different forms of sigma?
The middle or the end? The beginning, starts at the
beginning, middle, or the final sigma? 3. Or that's it?
What are the two breathing marks?
What are the two breathing marks?
Rough
and smooth. Rough and smooth.
Vowel,
or the rough could be over a row, too. Okay. See how easy the homework is? Alright, what's the next question?
Iota?
Okay, we haven't covered that yet.
Iota.
Okay. We're going to have to push right till 4 o'clock here. Pronouncing diphthongs. Diphthongs are cool. Diphthongs is two vowels that produce one sound. The second vowel is always an iota or an upsilon. So sometimes vowels will appear side by side. It's important to understand in syllabifying when they make one sound or they make two syllables. Because a lot of times each vowel will basically be part of a unique syllable. So like if you go to Hawaii and you really know how to speak Hawaiian, right? I learned this once I was there. Every vowel gets its own syllable. So if you go to Kauai, it's really, how do you say that in Hawaiian? Kauai, right? You have to say each vowel. So you syllabify. In Hawaiian. This is not Hawaiian. Okay. Some vowels, when they appear side by side, will just make one sound. You know this in English. Like, boy, oil. You don't say, oil. That's a diphthong. You didn't know you were using diphthongs. You just did it. So, I, as in a pirate, isle. So, alpha and iota make an I sound. I would say this, Iro. A, as in eight, epsilon, iota. Sounds a lot like another vowel. What other vowel does that sound like? Eta, right? Eta. So sometimes you'll see an E and a iota, an epsilon and a iota, but when they're together, they make the same sound as an eta. A. That's just the way it is. Oi, ow, sour, crow, pout. Ooh, soup. It's not soup, soup. So here we have oi, kia. Is this a diphthong right here?
No.
No, it's not. See, this iota and alpha are not making a diphthong. So those are each a sound. So, oikia, altas, ude. Here we have ui, like sweet, ui. But you can't, if you have your book, you can see it better. What kind of breather is that? Smooth or rough?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sounds rough, mate. Rough breather makes what sound? Careful. There's someone sitting in front of you. Okay, so, huios, but with a rough breather. So, how do we say sun in Greek? Huios. 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 Okay. Then we have epsilon, upsilon, and eta, upsilon, more rare. But ooh, like feud, uthus, or, gosh, uksanen. That almost sounds like Egyptian or something. Okay, they're less common. Now, this is part of your homework right here. Improper diphthong. An improper diphthong is made up of a vowel and an iota subscript. The iota subscript is a small little iota written under the vowels alpha, eta, or omega. So, you will see sometimes an alpha or an eta or an omega. And the Greeks did not want to make, they did not want to write it like this, like a regular diphthong.
So what they, but they didn't want to lose it. They wanted to keep it. But they didn't want it to affect the way it sounded. But if they lost it, it might change the meaning. So what they would do is they would subscript it underneath. Like that. Look at it says up here, this is normally the last letter on a word when this happens. And it has no effect on the pronunciation. So it's not like I, it's just alpha. But they didn't want to lose it because of the translation. So it was important, that little iota down there is very significant for the meaning. But they stuck it down there because they didn't want to see it. They didn't want to pronounce this I. They wanted to pronounce it ah. So they moved it down here to not lose it. That's a subscript, iota subscript. And in your homework, it's going to ask you what an improper, what improper diphthong is, right? Doesn't it?
No. How does the iota subscript affect pronunciation?
Okay, it doesn't really say improper diphthong. How does it affect pronunciation? That is a trick question. It does not. Okay. All right. Here's a this is like the garbage can stuff right now. We're just getting a whole bunch of little tidbits here. If a word begins with a diphthong, what's a diphthong? Two vowels that make one sound, right? Like I. If a word begins with a diphthong, the breathing mark. What are our two breathing marks?
Rough and
smooth. The breathing mark is placed over the second vowel of the diphthong. So iteo. Breathing mark just goes right here. Now, this may seem really tedious. It was important in the old way we learned Greek because in old school Greek class, we had to translate from English to Greek. Think about that. We had English sentences, and our professor said, create the appropriate Greek translation. This is like reverse engineering. Right? We're not doing that. And I gotta praise the Lord. Now, if you had to create Greek from scratch based upon the English, right? You would need to know all these rules. Because you would get it wrong if you put your breathing mark over the first vowel of the diphthong. But you don't have to do that. So this is just for your general kind of background information, is to know that you won't see the breather over the first letter of the diphthong. It will be on the second one. Alright? In some words, you'll find two vowels that normally form a diphthong, but in the case of this word, it is does not. To show that these two vowels are pronounced as two separate sounds instead of a diphthong, we'll have a diaresis, which is these two little dots. That will mean diphthong, but with the two dots, you go, oh, I need to syllabify this in two separate sections, two separate sounds. I, alpha iota, normally forms a diphthong, but in the case of, this is an eta, hasios, there's your diaresis right there. It indicates that the forms are two separate sounds. Okay, that is not very common. That you see those two little dots. But it happens occasionally. Alright, so here's our summary. It's essential that you learn the alphabet right away. You cannot do anything until you know the alphabet. Learn the English name, how to write the small letter, and how to pronounce the letter. It's just alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon. You'd be able to go through the alphabet like that. Excuse me. Every word beginning with a vowel must have a rough or a smooth. The diphthong consists of two vowels pronounced as a single sound. The second vowel is always an iota or an upsilon. An improper diphthong is a iota subscript. Okay. Ignore the advanced information. All right, so as far as actual content, we're going to stop there. Let's look at, let's see, If you look at your syllabus, on your reading, on the right side, there's some language I'm reading, pages 9 through 12. Did we get through chapter 3? We did. Very awesome. We're on schedule. We didn't compensate for Labor Day, but we're on schedule for today. Next class, what was going to be due was a quiz on the alphabet. So you'll have to write out alpha, beta, gamma, delta, epsilon, zeta, eta, all the way across. Don't forget final sigma. You have two sigmas. That would be the basically the content of the quiz for next week. Okay? And you would turn in, next week you would come to class with exercise 3 done on that left column. Everyone see that? So when you're reading this course schedule, what's in parentheses on that left column is what is due that day. Does everybody see that? Raise your hand if you don't.
Okay. Right here.
That's due that day.
The workbook.
Yep. Exercise 3 in the workbook on September 1st would have been due. And a quiz. Okay? The right-hand column for the reading, that was also due that day. So now it's 12 through 19. Okay? So, we're going to have to see how this goes when we come back. But what I'd like you to do in light of the holiday is read the reading assignment for September 8th when you come back. So we'll keep our reading schedule unchanged. So you can see on September 8th when you come back to class, you should have read through maps page 26. Lammer said you should have read through page 20. Right? So you do all the reading. We will, in next class, cover chapter 4, syllabification, and do the homework together. Okay? And then we'll introduce nouns. So make sure you write your alphabet out a lot, over and over and over again. Just write that out. Every quiz we have, just about this semester, we'll have the first thing on the quiz will be the alphabet. You will know the alphabet really well. But you can't do anything if you don't know the alphabet. Okay? So, one last thing. Dr. Mouse talks about this in the book. I forget where, but I'm just going to say it now. When you're learning Greek, you will be in what he calls the fog. You guys have now moved into the fog. It's a little hard to see ahead. Things are a little confusing. Alright? And you will be in the fog this whole semester. But, here's how you know if you are learning the right way. If you are in the fog with whatever chapter we're in, great, that's fine. Go by faith. If you can go back 3 chapters, and then 3 chapters back and say, I got that, then you are exactly where you should be. Okay? Do we have 3 chapters to go back on right now? We do not. So you are purely in the fog right now, other than the alpha. Alright? So, take heart with that. We always push forward, but if you're able to look back and say, oh, I've got that. So, that means on September 8th, when we're talking about all kinds of stuff, if you understand the alphabet, you understand what a diphthong is, you're good. You're ready to show that. Yes.
Should we have exercise 4 and review number 1 done by next time, too?
No. Because we want to cover enough material to do that yet.
So we're just turning in exercise 3.
Exercise 3, yep. You know your alphabet and have your reading done. Any questions? All right. God bless you guys. Yes.
I have the Logos platform software.
Yes.
Is that going to help at all?
Not right now.
Okay.
Once we get through all this, and it'll help you a whole lot.
So when you're learning, so when we come back, we're going to have to know all the not in the Omega, not written out Omega, but like with this, right? The actual letter for it.
We're going to write out the alphabet in this letter.
Right.